Well, boys, looks like you started the fun without me.
You're all sick. Every last one of you.
We're going to need a bigger gun.
What's the matter? You scared of things that go boom, boom, boom?
Give me one goddamn reason why I shouldn't blow your goddamn brains all over that goddamn wall.
My name is Eric, and I am here today with Deep State Operative Michael Kester.
Yep, that's me.
I don't know if you saw, but Russia hacked Twitter this week and tried to make a double feature Twitter account. I don't know what that was about.
Weird.
But thankfully...
Did you take care of that business?
My two-factor authentication. You wouldn't know because I guess they blocked you for some strange reason. Huh. We're going to do two films today. One, it don't even fuck with me on Twitter. Don't even... You don't think for a fucking second about fucking with me on Twitter, all right?
Mm-hmm.
I will smack you down on the show. I will smack you down. I blocked you. We're going to do two movies today, and you probably didn't see one of them or the other one, because if you see one of these films, you're just probably not the person who would see the other one, but you should do that. I don't know which one of those is which for who, but John saw one of these movies,
mm-hmm.
and in naming the two films, it would be nice if we could figure out which one. I have a guess.
Do you? Why don't you go ahead and guess? Let me put it this way. You decide, did John pick the first or second film today?
I think John picked the first film.
John picked the first film. What's the first film?
I don't know. You're supposed to tell me that.
John picked Barbershop, which we're going to do first. And then
Hold on a second. John picked Barbershop.
John picked Barbershop.
All right. Okay. I don't care. 24. I don't, whatever. Go listen to a different show. Well, I have no primers for people in this show. I have to say a little something about making this here double feature. So a long time ago, you were like, hey, Eric, see Barbershop. Now, I am sort of a pretentious fuck. I like really dry films. I don't like anything that's gonna make cheap fucking laughs. Or, you know, just be a watch a movie and a pack of people and have a good time, pot, smoke, and romp. And it turns out Barbershop fulfills all those pretentious things and doesn't do any of that other stuff
mm-hmm.
that I just assumed it would just... I thought, hey, I've seen Friday.
Yeah.
I don't really need to see it again.
Yeah.
And I'm an asshole for that.
Yep.
I went, same dude.
Yep.
Same fucking movie. Whatever. Oh, good. Another franchise for Ice Cube. And the problem I'm picking up, and this is dangerous because I know some of the films that Ice Cube has made, is that they're all so goddamn good.
It's insane.
And I'm always wrong. I'm just always wrong about Ice Cube movies.
Yeah.
I'm just going, Ice Cube, you can't be making good movies. Ice Cube.
Right.
And so one, I'm a bad person. And two, so are you for not seeing Barbershop. See Barbershop.
I've seen I own Barbershop. I got the special edition. Uncut.
See, that's the kind of stuff. It's not my inherent racism. We already covered that last episode.
Mm-hmm.
I believe black people should be allowed in the Breakfast Club, even though it's a private club.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Not racist. But for whatever reason, let's go ahead and assume uncut edition. I assumed that, you know, we might get some low-hanging fruit jokes
sure.
in here.
So what you're saying is you didn't expect there to be a rousing conversation about whether or not Rosa Parks was a viable figure for civil rights? That wasn't...
I mean, I was surprised when I walked in the door, let alone when I got in the back rooms.
Yeah.
So I just had no fucking clue it was coming. And then Wall Street, why don't we just get all of these Oliver Stone films done in the first 6 weeks of double feature?
Sure,
I'm
yeah.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
So there's going to be spoilers. We're going to do Barbershop first. And about halfway through the show, which I believe is about 24 minutes in, depending on how many fucks the editor gives, we're going to switch over, that's me, to Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
I love this theme. I don't really know what it is. Mm-hmm. It's something money. I like it.
Something money. We're talking about race and money.
Wall Street 3, something money.
I believe something
that
money.
Is the name of that.
Something yeah. money this way comes.
Don't give them any ideas.
No, one of the things I want to talk about a lot, and we'll start with Barbershop, kink, is I want to talk a lot
There's
about...
There's no chat. Don't make a chapter sound. There's no chapters in this show.
I want to talk... when you hear this sound, kink, turn
you
the page.
You fast-forwarded too far.
One of the things I really want to talk about is the idea of money and corruption, but I really want to use kind of the racial standards that these two movies present as a lens.
Mm-hmm.
I went through a lot of, you know this because we talked about it, I went through a lot of options with what to pair with Barbershop. And I was kind of thinking There Will Be Blood and do, you know, capitalistic madness. And I was thinking Pursuit of Happiness and talk about the financial struggle of, you know, African Americans. But I am white and that's a hard conversation. So I want to talk a little bit about with Barbershop, the dwindling reality of black ownership in the United States of America. Yeah, I bet you didn't expect us to go there. but in the United States of America, there is an I don't have the number and it's arbitrary. It doesn't matter, but there is an incredibly high number of white owned businesses and businesses owned by a lot of non-white races that aren't black people. Black ownership in the United States business world is virtually non-existent. It's incredibly rare. I recently read a story about, believe it or not, the first black-owned grocery store opening in Compton, California this year.
Oh my God. Yeah. Can that really be true?
It's legit. No, it's true. She's wonderful. You should look up the article, but
I should go.
Yeah, you should also go.
I don't think I'm allowed to be afraid of Compton while trying to pat myself on the back for going to the first black-owned grocery store. I don't think I'm allowed to do both of those. So this is a very character-searching moment, soul-searching moment for me.
One of the things that I think is really important, one of the lenses that I think is really important when you're going into a film like Barbershop, is that first off, and we've talked about this before, this movie is geared towards a black audience, much like Leprechaun 5.
Another film that I didn't think would go the places it went.
Different ice in that one, though.
Yeah.
This movie is coming from a place, it's, you know, for lack of better phrasing, and pardon me, it is a film made by the black community for the black community.
Mm.
And so it's important to look at the lens of black ownership as important as it is in this film. So you have, you know, to somebody like the cast of Wall Street.
The Sheen family, you mean?
Yeah.
Today it's black ownership and Sheen ownership. I don't know why you went so specific with the white people, but that's what we're doing.
With somebody like the cast of Wall Street or the characters in Wall Street, the idea of this barbershop is it's just a non-idea. You know, it's just whatever. It's a small business and you failed. Start a new one.
Right.
But this there is legacy here. And I think that, and one of the reasons that I love that they use the barbershop is that mentality that Cedric the Entertainer's character calls up is like the barbershop is the cornerstone of the community. It's where you go for advice. It's where you go for all that. You know, it is historically one of the only community businesses, especially in black parts of town. You know, this is Chicago, so the South Side, right? It's historically one of the only businesses in the South Side of Chicago that may be regularly black owned. And so the idea of the legacy and the importance of this place feels, and this is where the movie comes in, right? Feels so legit when you're watching it. I mean, like from the very first scene, you go, oh, this isn't just about like haircuts. This is essentially the, you know, this is the Inglewood, Chicago equivalent of the country club. You know, this is where you go, you see your people. This is where people go, you know, they sell things, they help each other out, you know, they get each other suited up for their jobs. And right across the street, people are getting robbed. Like, this is the world we live in.
Sure. Well, it's an institution. And I think also the movie tries to, what is this, 2002?
Mm-hmm.
It has the aesthetic of a 30-year-old film.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just not enough can be said about how tonally serious this movie takes itself and how validated that is by what the movie talks about. But it starts from a very modern perspective of black barbershop. That's not a thing. Maybe that was a thing at some point. But who even cares? It's a small business. Close it down, open another one.
Yeah.
And the main crux of the film, well, depending on how you look at it, it's either about the character of the shop and how people rely on it or opening an ATM. Depends which story really you're in it for. I don't think we've ever seen a movie with such a blatant B story.
Right.
Of just like, oh, there was this other film we made. Mm-hmm. That's in here too.
It comes in handy at the very, right. very, very right. end.
It's almost like a go level of, oh, that's how these stories weave together.
Sure. You yeah. know what I mean? It's like somebody made a movie called Hamster Style and then just wove it around Barbershop because they couldn't figure out a way to imply it in the former part of the film.
Oh, fuck. Those two characters could have at least left the barbershop in the opening of the movie or something. What the fuck? No, but I mean the
Angie
movie.
Angie was my cousin.
What? Right, right, right. The movie goes through and tries to convince the audience the same way that I feel like I need some fucking convincing of like, oh, barbershop, that's a stereotype, which to say more in a more educated sense, to a more educated person would be, oh, barbershop, that's not a thing that exists anymore. In my head, I'm completely fucking ignorant of that outside of the terrified moments I spent in the South Side, mm-hmm. which to my view looks just as like as many black owned pizza shops. I would have just gone, maybe that's a thing. Mm-hmm. Probably, but that's do the right thing, isn't it? Actually, yeah. maybe that is a thing.
Yeah, that is. But except the pizza shop's white owned, don't forget.
That's true, yeah. But also very much a movie about community. Black-owned pizza shops, colon, is that a thing? Address this on Twitter to two white kids who have no fucking clue. But instead of, you know, it talks to me in talking to a person who goes, does this make sense? Why should this matter in modern America? Why is an institution important? This community hangout that's always been a community hangout. Yeah, I hear you, but you know what? My dad and my dad's dad fucking ran this place into the ground financially, and I like have to pay bills, and now it's all on me, and fuck those guys.
And also, I got hip-hop dreams, coach.
Right, right, totally, totally.
Yeah.
He's going, I don't care about
He's like, I don't want to be in this movie, I want to be a rap star. Yeah, I'm Ice Cube.
I know. God, it's so good. It's so good, and so it's not here to educate me, which it does, you know, by way of talking to a smarter audience anyways. But it's basically here to convince people that an institution like this still has power mm-hmm. today. It is still a place where these people come. And although you have to deal with its modern problems that maybe you think people before you didn't have to deal with, although you kind of realized maybe they sort of did, there's a reason to keep it around.
Sure.
It's an important thing, not just for the community, but if it turns out for the owner himself.
One of the reasons that I really like it in the context of today's show is that it's an interesting study to contradict the idea of money as power. You have this person who's in a position to get a lot of money for something that he largely has little interest in. And what's fascinating about it is you never feel like that money empowers him. Like having that cash in hand, he never feels like he's more confident.
It's hot potato.
Sure.
There's literally a scene of him running away from the money.
But what's interesting is that it's contradicted by the idea of this institution as power, regardless of the financial gain. And it's a situation going, well, money is power, but honestly, you know, I would pay $20,000 to just have this here. You look at the community who is a regular customer of the barbershop. Essentially, like I said, it's club dues, right? They go to the country club. They don't need their haircut, you know, maybe as much as they do, but they go there. They put their $10 down. They keep the business floating. They're not necessarily, you're not going to make money at this business.
This is also true for the people who rent chairs there to make money.
Yeah.
They're going to go there and they might not even fucking cut hair.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe because they don't want to. Maybe because no one wants them to cut their hair. But they're showing up there because this is Clerks, people.
Sure.
It's the hangout and it's the place where you can talk about these Rosa Parks issues.
Yeah. I mean, like it's, you know, for you and I, right, to put this in the lens of your and my life, the barbershop is the mall.
Sure, yeah.
You know, You work there. Nobody ever fucking buys anything. They just come in and they talk to you. Oof,
I picked the wrong Kevin Smith movie. That is so... That unfortunately has not persisted into my 30s with the staying power that the barbershop probably would.
Yeah.
But man, when I was growing up, you don't make any money. They don't make any money.
Yeah.
Nobody buys anything there.
Your friends come in. Nobody buys anything. Your boss is like, your friends can't keep coming in here.
Uh-huh.
And you're just like, unless they're going to buy something. And you're like, fine, well, I'm just going to go over to Gamers Paradise and hang out with them. Fuck you.
Right.
Because that's where they work, of course, or Claire's or Zoomies. Oof. Because you all just hang out at the mall with the other people who work at the mall, but nobody's buying anything. And then the mall goes under and some guy in a really sassy baby blue Homburg turns it into a giant mall themed strip club. I'm putting that in the back of my business acumen mind.
I was going to say, I believe you have the remake, the all white remake of Barbershop. Oh, and we've done it. Look how progressive
we are.
The
John Hughes remake of Barbershop.
Ah, Jesus Christ. See, people, white kids even have things to offer to society. God, that's fucking powerful. If I've ever thought about anything on this show. You know, the idea contrasting these two films and why this is just, you know, to applaud you. And, well, I'll applaud John instead of you this time.
Thanks. Yeah, good job, funnier, John. Way to pick Barbershop.
Funnier to me. Of really thinking about what, because we're comparing it with Wall Street, we think about what power is. And as we get into Wall Street, that'll kind of deconstruct, you know, are we really talking about power? Is that like a mask for something else? But if we could keep it in the lens of power, then that money is just it's almost comically thrown at him.
Mm-hmm.
In a situation that is, you really want to talk about something that's funny, that is almost low-hanging fruit levels of funny, and just that he trips backwards into a... The guy goes, you know, Keith David, right?
Yeah.
It's Keith David in that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Keith David goes, you know, if I give you this money, it's as good as a contract. And what we say to each other, 100% has to be upheld by the law. And nice cube character goes, well, yeah, okay, I guess I get that. And he hands him the money and he goes, by contract, I mean, you have to keep this money and give me the barbershop, but I'm at strip club. Anyways, peace out. And Ice Cube's character is just kind of like, what? Hold on a second. I think I just like fucked everything up. Where are you going? I won't be able to find you for at least another hour and 20 minutes. Where you come back here?
Like, are you going where that ATM is? I don't know what's going on with that ATM.
Right. Anyways, don't suck any ATMs on the way to the parking lot. And so that is the moment of losing the power in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And of really, it's that forced kind of decision on him that makes him question everything and makes him start looking at, oh, maybe I fucked this up. Had he not made that decision, that is the catalyst, not because the bowling alley's closing and we have to have a fundraising concert, but because he's forced into the decision he has always flirted with making. He finally gets stuck in the position of going, okay, you're right. Barbershop doesn't matter and you're selling it. Otherwise, he might work there another 10 years going, I should sell this barbershop. I need to quit one day. I need to quit one day. I don't want to work here forever. I need to quit one day. And because he's kind of forced to make that decision, the second he gets the money in his hand, he goes, oh, this doesn't really feel very good.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, it just completely crumbles up to the moment where he is most sure it's a mistake is also the moment he then has to go and tell everybody else what he did.
Right.
And you just couldn't, man, you want to seal that decision in.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't feel any worse than then saying it aloud to a person for like the first time.
Well, and I mean, it's compounded by the fact that one of his employees has worked there longer than him.
Oh, yeah.
And he just went, I sold this shit. And that, I mean, you know, that's Cedric the Entertainer's character, which, God, is he fucking good in this movie. And funny, but that character being, it's worse than if his dad were alive, right? Because his dad is still fucking dead. And then you have somebody going, your dad would be really disappointed. Also, I'm disappointed.
And also, I'm clearly the sage character, not the fucking comic relief, you asshole. Why didn't you ask me about this?
Yeah, exactly.
Which, man, just another thing I love that, you know, you can have just such a smart choice. to, again, to disarm people, to take this guy who is the older guy there and to give him a position of comedic relief. And then at the end to hit you with what Ice Cube's character is hit with, which is, you jerk, he's not the comedic relief. He also like, no, why didn't you just ask his opinion about this?
Everybody like, laughs at him.
He's clearly the one with all the opinions.
He's the funny guy because he's pretty confident that he knows what's going on.
Right. Right. You know, yeah.
He's only funny because he's figured it out. He's not funny because he's an idiot.
He's funny because nobody else knows he's figured it out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, you know, jeopardizing. So this is the thing I want to talk about in the very beginning. My other assumption going into this film, which I'm just doubly wrong about, is I go, okay, but I get that this is going to be a hangout film. And I do that in a way in my head that kind of discounts it. I go, all right, I'll put up with all this comedic farce in order so we can have a hangout film. And I see it and I want to say this isn't just some fucking hangout film, but also it totally is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's people and it's, we like hangout films because they flirt with bottle films. Mm-hmm. They flirt with, we never leave the barbershop. It's a B story to avoid being a bottle film.
What a hangout film is, let me just put this in perspective for a typical, you know, audience member who maybe doesn't come to the show every week, you jerk. A bottle film is when the entire film takes place in a single place. A hangout film is when the plot takes place in a bottle.
Well done.
It's when the plot doesn't go anywhere.
We could also say where the plot doesn't show up for the rest of the film. It's right. Just like, I don't know. They hang out. Listen, I got to go.
It's because it's Friday. The plot ain't got no job. The plot ain't got shit to do.
So to jeopardize that hangout as the plot gives it this kind of heaviness that allows it the space to start talking about these things in a more serious light, or even when it doesn't, to give it a certain kind of heaviness. The fact that this is an interesting line for it to walk, because the way that Ice Cube's character is just kind of left with this wad of money that he should be able to run out the door and prevent this whole thing from happening and just go like, no, seriously, that's not what we agreed to. Take this fucking money, get out of my shop, back when he still has like home turf, you know, advantage. That should give the movie some kind of weakness of, I don't know, unbelievable foil or something, where you just go, well, why didn't he run out of the shop and throw the wad of money and this whole thing is avoided? But because the film uses just kind of this almost a little comedic goof to create the conundrum of now the shop is gone, it immediately has a heaviness that makes everything worth so much more, gives it so much more weight, gives it so much more of an ability to bring the audience in, sit them down and have kind of a serious discussion about something over what would be kind of a comedic manner. Just as comedic, if not, when you look at the two stories in this, stealing the ATM machine should actually be way fucking heavier.
Don't say ATM machine.
I was avoiding all my heavy jokes.
I'm sorry.
All my heavy puns. And I walked right into an ass to mouth machine pun.
Right.
Which is what ATM machine stands for. So I was still in the clear on that.
Did you put your PIN number in the ATM machine?
Fuck you, okay? You think I use an ATM? Look at me. I use an ATM. I haven't even put cash in my fucking fist for 10 years.
A USD dollar.
Yeah, because I'm super digital Bitcoin-y, okay? But I just don't have any money. So patreon.com/double feature. We're going to lose this fucking barbershop. And I just want some people to help us out, please. My point is, it's a good movie and it's heavy and talks about stuff. What else are we doing on this fucking show today?
Ding. Wall Street is a film.
Wall Street, a film that's really heavy and could use a little comedic relief. Wall Street.
Yeah. So I actually, a little bit of Wall Street being the pair I owe to you, because I asked you whether Wall Street or There Will Be Blood would have been a better film, just blindly, because you didn't know the theme, but blindly, what film would you rather cover? And I mentioned to you that I wanted to do Wall Street, but I was hesitant to cover Oliver Stone again so rapidly on the show, to which you said, you know, some of your most sage advice I've heard from you in a while, fuck it, why not? Who cares? That's what you said. And I really took those words to heart.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they came into play a lot.
Put that on my tombstone, please. Who cares?
They came into play a lot while I was watching this movie because Oliver Stone is kind of the worst. But, you know, fuck it. Whatever. Who cares?
Come on. It's the second best movie on the show, as I like to say, as of late.
I would argue that so far, it may be the second best Oliver Stone movie I've ever seen.
Well, this here's one of the things that made me think you'd really like Wall Street. And one of the things there's a lot to like in Wall Street for, you know, as here you take the money and run off as its plot is, because it's more absurd than the plot of Barbershop. Let's be real here. Or maybe just the way it's treated is more absurd. It's a fucking thing that actually happens. It's a fucking expose film. So it's not, it's only absurd because Wall Street is fucking absurd.
Right. Sure.
The entire idea. I want to see a bottle film that's set on the floor of Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
That's the absurd Wall Street film that I want to see. If you really want to highlight the absurdity of Wall Street, I want a guy who just like screams random things that mean nothing to people waving around papers in the air for an hour and 20 minutes.
That's one of the most Michael Mann things about this movie is that the way they talk about the stock market is just like zooming over your head. Right. You're just like, they could be making this whole thing. This might as well be sign language because they might be mocking me for as far as I can tell.
Let's come back around to the point I was trying to make in like 20 minutes while we just derail it. And this little side note, I'm glad you said that because even though I keep up with the, let's be kind and call it the Sorkin-esque pace.
Ooh, there we go.
The technical proficiency in the movie. I also kind of go, it's one of those great moments where you get to the end and the triumphant music is playing. So you just go, oh, so I guess this is good. So when they diversified those Roth IRAs or whatever.
Now, I've seen The Big Short, and The Big Short does a pretty good job of heavy-handedly, explicitly showing you how the stock market works, and they tell you about things like shorting stocks and how big you can short them. And I still go into Wall Street and I go, you guys aren't talking about shorting any stocks. So I'm confused.
Yeah, I got nothing.
And I, you know, I felt really smart after The Big Short, but I think The Big Short just makes you feel smart because Wall Street makes you feel fucking dumb. I felt like I'd rather go work on planes than try and understand what you're talking about.
Right, right. I get unions. I have no idea. I understand people lying in courts and covering things up, and I sort of get insider trading, but don't really understand why it's bad or how you could possibly make it illegal, because it just sort of seems like, don't we all buy things on the notion we have of some
That's
secret information we have that no one else does, that it's going to be good?
It's kind of like the thing you were talking about last week where it's like, at what point do you draw the line in the sand where it's like, yeah, you should just fucking kill yourself, man. You know?
Let's just keep going down these roads because I don't mind. Insider trading. What if a company gives you stock options? Aren't they just encouraging everyone to do insider trading?
Sure. Yeah.
I don't understand how anything works.
But I think that the movie exploits your Rubish greenness to Wall Street.
You can't really say Rubish either, but not for a pun reason. It's just a stupid word. Anyways,
what? Because you have the character you follow is this hotshot who believes he's, you know, I'm doing a great job here. I'm king of the stock market. When in reality, he's just being fed the right answers. It's as if somebody just handed him the back of the book. And then they're like, you know, here's the back of the book. You get all the test answers. And then at the end,
I'm a genius.
Right. And you're like, oh my God, I'm getting all these answers right. And then that person takes your test as they walk it up to the front of the class and just writes their name on the top. I understand that movie.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. I was going to, I guess I get where you were going, but I'm going to say that's not the guy I follow.
And they go, that guy fucking cheated on my test.
The, I'm a video drum guy, so I just follow James Spader in any movies.
Right.
I don't care if he's the main character or not. I go
get
like,
James Spader. When you go, hey, you want to make some money? He's like, sounds suspicious.
Sounds like you're in a movie where you're going down at the end. Are you it's sure you want me to?
Well, this, okay. This movie to contrast, I mean, to actually, to compare it to Barbershop, anytime somebody goes, hey, you want to make some money? You're like, don't do what that guy's doing.
That's you want to make some money is
you want to make some money is the way that people say, hey, you want to get fucked?
Interestingly, hey, do you want to get fucked? A question I give a different answer to every time. So I don't know. Maybe I should be learning something here on the show today. All right. What was the thing we were going to talk about like 7 points ago that was actually important?
Stock market, whizzing over your head, money.
Money, never sleeping. Before just keep going back. I swear there was a thing.
The film Wall Street by Oliver Stone.
Thank you. Can we get a do-over on this show? Now I see why people don't do tangents, because now I don't even remember where the fuck we were going when we had a good point and not just things that I was really excited. Oh, I fucking remember Oliver Stone.
See?
Yeah, I remember this guy. Okay, so the reason that I thought you would be into some of this Oliver Stone over here. I make a joke, a lot of jokes about Oliver Stone being heavy-handed because 2 episodes ago or what the fuck ever, we were just talking about that in a context where perhaps it was appropriate and perhaps it's not today, but...
Fuck it, who cares?
Wise man once said, we all dead, fuck it. Put his quote on my tombstone. We'll just go ahead and steal that too because I'm going to write my answer on his fucking test. That's a Run the Jewels lyric. No one gets my Susie and the Banshees joke, so I make a Run the Jewels joke. Nobody fucking gets that either. Where are you, audience surrogate? Huh? You want to help me out here?
I'm sorry. Maybe we should just go further down the spiral.
Thank you. See? I can't even make jokes from the new album. I haven't heard it yet. I'm a terrible Eric 13. I'm
you just can't speak in caps being... lock, though, so nobody would get them.
See, you're loaded and ready for this. I'm not... I got like a girl with a dragon tattoo joke. Is that still an album? Mm-hmm. Is that Gone Girl joke? Nothing? Okay. I was once upon a time telling you the reason that I thought you would be into this movie. And the reason it reminds me of some early Oliver Stone stuff, aside from kind of being some early Oliver Stone stuff. So we think back to Natural Born Killers. And I think
familiar.
The methods of storytelling for as close as anything could be to Natural Born Killers, I mean, none of the Oliver Stone movies really feel like that to me.
Mm-hmm.
But there is something about it that's very visceral. Fuck, I could have used the Trent Reznor Natural Born Killers transition. I could have made it sound like I was reaching right back. Double feature.
I'm sorry.
I wish I still had enough energy to edit this show. I could just fix this whole fucking thing.
If you went back, you could put everything right where it belongs.
Go forward in time and listen to the album. Go back in time, make a joke.
The line's beginning to blur. Can we move forward? Is this the beginning of the end?
Stop. I'm trying really hard over here. And you are not helping. You're not helping at all.
I'm the great destroyer. I'm sorry.
Fuck off. Do you just have a track list in front of you? What are you doing right now? It's as if over the last 10 years, you've had some of these like, you know, followed right up inside there. I don't have a Nine Inch Nails joke. I'm not stalling while I think of one. I'm just mad.
I know. It's okay.
I'm just angry. I hope no one's waiting for one to show up, but it's just not. I'm just going to say something about like a net picking things up. Great. I have nothing to.
Perfect.
Nothing to say to you.
Back to Wall Street.
Michael, the reason I thought, what is this show? What is it? Just give me a second. Not since like year one of this show have I had such a problem composing myself for this. Visceral was the word I was using.
Mm-hmm.
Visceral. There's a scene where we meet Gecko, finally. The what I believe is, by the audience reaction, the hero of the film. I don't know why anyone hasn't actually seen this fucking movie, but it seems like when this movie is referenced, it's just because dudes in ties really like Alec Baldwin's character from Glengarry Glen Ross. Mm-hmm. It's just all those people who are like, yeah, Wall Street, Gordon Gekko really knows what's going on.
Yeah, right.
When we're introduced to him, we move into his fucking carpeted office.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing when we're on the floor you know, amongst the computers, talking to Charlie Sheen for the first time. It just seems like crazy 19-year-old Oliver Stone running around with a camera on his shoulder, just fucking doing it. We are getting up in people's faces. We're running across there. There is a chaos to this movie.
Definitely.
That doesn't happen in Platoon. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is just this sort of down in the trenches fucking warfare that Wall Street is shot with that makes it seem like natural born killers. That makes it seem like life or death, insanity all over the place.
You know why I think that is, especially when you compare it directly to something like Natural Born Killers? I feel like there is so much hatred coming from the auteur toward the subject matter of this movie.
Ooh.
That
doesn't that sound like W?
Yeah. I mean, it is seeping with this disgust for this world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something too that I think is actually really resonant in the big scene in JFK. It's just, there is so much, again, to use your word, visceral hatred for...
You were going to go with detachment from reality. You really threw me a curveball with that JFK reference.
For Gecko and for the movie seems to really side heavily with that moment where Martin Sheen opts not to take the airplanes to... I don't know what the real idea is behind that, but basically Wall Street goes, can we Wall Street your airplanes? And Martin Sheen goes, please don't Wall Street my airplanes. And they're like, you'll get hella Wall Streeted. That means money temporarily. And he's like, I'm going to opt out of Wall Streeting my airplanes.
See, you get it. People understand this movie. Maybe that's one of the reasons that I think the filmmaking technique means so much to it. It's why I think back to this movie even more than I do. You know, Natural Born Killers, it makes sense to be chaotic.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's Natural Born Killers. It's just part of the style.
Sure.
And, you know, it lends itself to the characters.
And because there's a director trying to rampantly shoehorn an anti-media theme into a perfectly written film. Yeah.
I know. Rampantly shoehorn. I've never heard those two words on every Oliver Stone show on this fucking podcast. Is this additional content? What are we doing over here?
I want to tie this in with Barbershop in a really good way. Are you ready?
Too bad. I'm not done with you.
Okay, good.
The visceral thing's important because it needs to feel like, it needs to give people the feeling of what's going on. I think that's how it talks to people. I think that's how, you know, it tells you more through its visuals than I think through the words of the story, what to feel in what places. And how to do it, I think it's really trying to use pieces of cinema to do that more than I think Stone does in maybe almost any of his other movies. Mm-hmm. Certainly when we saw something like W, we didn't spend a lot of time going, you see how he lined up that shot, that's to do X, Y, D, Z thing. You know, he's more technically proficient in the film, but I think the crudeness of this movie lets you feel the chaos going on and the attempt amongst that chaos to just dominate things. I mentioned the fucking carpeting earlier without even saying where I was going, but just the camera shake of moving, of that dolly kind of moving into the room, mm-hmm. and just the haphazard nature, both because of the time, but also just this almost run and gun style filmmaking.
Sure. Yeah.
That goes, okay, get in here, tapping on a computer. Who gives a fuck? What are we doing? Give me a fistful of cash. I'm going to go over here. You're fucked. I don't remember why. Let's move over to this other room.
Wait, take this fistful of cash back. Don't turn Wall Street into a strip club.
Oh, it's really a shame that there wasn't a better tie-in, you know, that a character literally from Wall Street hadn't shown it. It was 2002. They could have put characters from Wall Street in Barbershop.
And so that brings me to kind of the two points I want to call to attention in Wall Street. And I want to talk about power and I want to talk about institution. So we talked about the institution of the barbershop and how that's kind of a positive community institution. And I don't even think that this film had any idea what kind of an institution it was pointing a camera at when this movie came out.
An evil, corrupt one, obviously.
Well, but I don't think it realized exactly the level of issue that was going to be presented by that same institution. You know, in the 1980s, Wall Street's just full of a bunch of slimy 80s guys who are out to make a quick buck and throw their other white rich friends under the bus in order to do it. In the mid-2000s, Wall Street is occupied by 99%ers who are trying to just get enough money to live. Wall Street has become, you know, I just feel like the social image of the institution of Wall Street, I feel like if you were to take a camera into the Wall Street stock market, it's a non, like what's inside the building cannot be filmed. You can't point a camera at any one thing in Wall Street and really show what society views of Wall Street anymore. It has become this like cube, right? It's this fucking faceless machine of greed and power. It influences nations. It influences economies. Yeah. It is a headless, indestructible beast. It, even when it fails, it succeeds. You know, it is, I just feel like the modern day institution of Wall Street doesn't even have a fucking gecko.
Well, part of the reason I think for that is because we live so outside it, and it is such a club of people, you know. Once in a while, we find like a Madoff type scheme, or somebody goes to jail and we learn who they are and we tell their story and we kind of go, oh, so that's what one of those Wall Street people looks like.
Mm-hmm.
But when you are outside of Wall Street, you look like Occupy.
Yeah.
Raising a fist in the air.
Right.
And you don't actually know. You can't draw a picture of the guy.
Sure.
That you're raising your... Look at how people fight back against this politically. They go, oh, you're in bed with Goldman Sachs. Mm-hmm. Who is Goldman Sachs? Can you do a police artist rendition of him? Mm-hmm. You can't. You're going, oh, this institution.
The white dollar sign. Yeah.
Yeah. Institutions are made of people.
Sure.
And they're made of a lot of decisions. That's what we saw
in the previous film, is you have this interior of an institution and it is basically greater than the sum of its parts.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at the institution of Wall Street. And to me, I think what's fascinating is that you have all these people holding each other up in barbershop,
mm-hmm.
basically trying to just hang on and create a functional, safe place for this community to blossom. And in Wall Street, it somehow created the antithesis of the same institution, where an institution has been built on the fucking bodies of the people you've managed to step on.
Absolutely.
And it's just fascinating to me that this, you know, that you can achieve power in this, you can achieve the same or even greater levels of power in a negative, you know, in the inverse institution.
Sure.
And I think part of that, you know, just to, you know, call it as it is, I think part of that is because Wall Street is a largely white institution, right? It's white ownership piled on top of white ownership.
I think the other thing about that, though, comes from its worldview that, you know, that actually Oliver Stone probably believes to maybe to a large degree that it is a zero-sum game.
Mm-hmm.
That we can't, you know, in order for
one to... I think they say that in the movie, yeah.
One to get...
Oh, do you?
I think so. Could it perhaps be every other line of the movie? No, I think it probably is only once, but I don't feel like that's a line to be torn down by other people.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that is a thesis put forward in the film to go, as long as you are in Wall Street, there's only money to be made by fucking someone else over. Right.
It feels like in Wall Street, the amount of, because money equals power in Wall Street, as opposed to the previous film, it feels like there's this view of a finite nature of power. I mean, you know, there is X millions of dollars in this building and I'm going to have the most of it.
Yeah. And I mean, I really don't think that is a economically sound idea. I don't think...
Mm-hmm.
Economics is a zero-sum game. The math just doesn't make sense on that.
Mm-hmm.
But to look at an industry that is at least viewed from the outside, I'll say.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be someone outside of Wall Street looking in and just going, Goldman Sachs.
Right, totally agree. Yeah.
Even though I kind of am, a little bit.
Yeah, but that's not the point of the show, right?
I'm skeptical of myself.
Yeah, you and I may be, but Double Feature is not that person.
Yeah, I mean, well, what the fuck do I know is kind of what I...
Yeah, right, exactly. Who cares?
I don't have any fucking clue. But if you are... outside of Wall Street, what you see, and the reason I bring this up at all, is you see The Big Short. You see people going, the idea of shorting became so mind-blowing to people for its cynicism. Mm-hmm. Wait, you can bet on a company's failure to get money? It's like, well, if you can bet on a company's success, then one would only assume you could also bet on their just kind of betting works. Mm-hmm. But there is something that is so cynical about rooting for someone else to fail. And that's the kind of environment, or at least the reaction to that, shows something about what people view as a zero-sum game. As you have to, there has to be bodies underneath you for you to get any higher up. Mm-hmm. And what I think is interesting about Wall Street in comparison to barbershop, barbershop is the antithesis. Barbershop is everybody hangs together, the community's better for it. More ideas in a very libertarian sense. Mm-hmm. We go to this marketplace, more ideas means better conversation. We figure out if we had only talked to everybody that we shouldn't have closed the barbershop. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Wall Street, everybody has to split each other's throats, except when you get to the airline company, mm-hmm. which throws an interesting kind of, that's the outside perspective. We spend so much time with Charlie Sheen's character against Michael Douglas's character and talking about the culture and looking at it, not as we would today, but with a little bit more of a fascination, I think. He could be a good Wall Street guy. You know, there's still an opportunity in the 80s to go, we all love cocaine here, but this is a bad guy who likes cocaine and this is a good guy that likes cocaine.
Right.
Movies don't fucking do that anymore. They go, Goldman Sachs. But for this movie to follow him and go, he tried, but you know, the money corrupted him. And then to also take a step over and look at, well, what are white collar people, what are blue collar people doing in this white collar film? What, you know, these companies that are being bought and sold, what are the people working there? Like, are they getting fucked? What's happening there? Mm-hmm. And I think the film does that to pile up a couple more bodies.
Sure.
I think it's going, listen, we're going to fuck everyone in this game. Then we're going to move outside the game and fuck people who aren't even playing.
Well, because we're going to show you the real world. You know, it's like you're saying, we're going to illustrate the real world reality of when you go buy, sell. Because you're just seeing numbers flicker across a fucking screen. You know, you're seeing hands flicker, but when you look at the people that you're fucking on the other end of that, you know, stock number, that's when the reality of the bodies starts to make you look like a way worse person than just fucking Charlie Sheen.
This brings up a lot of questions that are kind of hard to figure out, and I don't know that I have definitive answers, but mostly around, you know, I want to push back on that a little, but I don't really know which position I take. I kind of want to invoke the opposite because mm-hmm. we talked about how technically high the film goes dialogue-wise and into the weeds on what's happening. But all we know as the small people watching the film is like somebody got Wall Streeted mm-hmm. and that was bad. I don't know how much of the, I think it's doing both, but I don't know how much of the film is going, look how Wall Street destroys the small guy, or how much is going, look how this story of the small guy impacts Charlie Sheen's character.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because it's...
I don't think those are mutually exclusive either, though.
No, because, you know, as I say that, I know that there is a lot of... Every time he talks to his dad, and Martin Sheen, it just should be said, is phenomenal, and I love him. And he just has, like, this wonderful, like, gravity in this that I just think is great. And also seeing the two of them in the same room acting, like, I know that goes without saying, but it's just, like, weird and amazing. Mm-hmm. He talks about, you know, you should make something for a living. You shouldn't just get rich off. And then whatever he says doesn't make any fucking sense. And that's actually probably a pretty good metaphor for what I'm talking about. It's probably a good representation that he starts to deliver this sort of heartfelt, like what a person should really do is go out there and create something for individuals, mm-hmm. not short the stocks of the mutual fund at the, I don't really know what I'm talking about. And that's the point where I go, oh, wait, are we rallying against all that mumbly stuff at the end that nobody really knows what that is?
Right.
Or are we trying to tell Charlie Sheen something about what he should do with his life? I'm kind of having some trouble figuring out, are we going, yeah, fuck Wall Street because they do this thing that we can't explain? Or are we saying something about like, well, don't worry about that second part. You should just make something. It's important to make something. That's the point. I don't know. It's doing both, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's probably some of both.
That would be the smart side to err on. I'm going to short not doing both.
Okay.
I want to thank Michael Kester, but I also want to thank the executive. I want to apologize to Michael Kester, but I always want to always want to apologize to the executive producers of the show. And this time that is Mark Abbott, Jordan Sells, David Anderson, Charles Crawford, Ben Ecker, and Aaron Shore. Ben Ecker, who I've already apologized to several times this week. Mm-hmm. This whole year of my life is just going very well. It's going swimmingly, I'd say. So listen, we have a patreon.com/double feature. If you could go over there and help fund the show, you could be an executive producer. You could get a back catalog of episodes, forward catalog of episodes, additional content. We did a huge Killapalooza thing, over 2 years of additional content. We'll do future Killapalooza things this year, so don't miss out on the two Killapaloozas that are hidden in additional content. Anyways, patreon.com/double feature. It keeps the show running, which we are barely doing, but it also gives you a bunch of other stuff for when those other people aren't holding their weight and you're the only one funding the Patreon and you miss where our show went. You can have all that other content. It's great. I'm an optimist. Let's pretend we're going to do another week of the show.
All right. I'm
what's going to go on it?
Well, I warned you a couple things. I warned you of two things. I warned you that I was going to take your Twitter to task. So we're going to do that next week.
Oh, great. Please. I'm not fragile enough.
No. It's a conversation. It's going to be an awesome talk. You're going to love it.
I don't know about that.
It's fabulous. It's the best. We have the best talks.
Don't remind me of the world I live in.
And also, I warned you, I teased you with this a little bit. Next week, we are going to cover what I think probably is the most offensive film we have ever covered in the history of Double Feature.
He says several weeks after Fahrenheit 9/11. I'm excited for this.
We're going to do a movie called Soul Man from 1986. Seriously, I feel like I need to...
Hold on. I haven't even heard of this.
We are going to do a film called Soul Man from 1986. Ooh, trust me, the conversation is going to be well worth sitting through this movie, but it is not an easy movie to sit through. And furthermore, here's a second caveat to that. It's not what you think. It's going to be way...
Oh.
It's going to seem way easier to get through and become very offensive very quickly. Okay?
Whoa. Listen, I have to tell you, I was done with your fucking podcast, but after a fucking teaser like that, I feel like going to patreon.com/double feature is what I'm getting at.
And then we're going to pair that with a 1965 film called...
Don't be a letdown. Don't be a letdown.
It Happened Here.
All right. What is that?
About if Hitler won World War II.
Really?
That will be the pair next week.
Jesus Christ.
And we're going to have a little conversation about whether it's worth it to make art. Watch more fucking film.
Bye.
This program is a proud member of the Battleship Pretension Fleet.